Внимание, внимание! Внимание, внимание! Внимание, внимание!
Hello everyone and welcome to this special broadcast from the Falls Hotel Ennis Diamond. My name is Daryl Leamy and it's great to have your company again as always. The reason why I'm here in Ennis Diamond is because the Burn Chernobyl project are celebrating 30 years of helping people in Belarus since the nuclear disaster which happened 37 years ago in 1986. And to tell us more on this, I'm joined by one of the volunteers involved in the Burn Chernobyl project, Ruth Byrne. Ruth, you're very welcome. Thank you.
Thanks for having us, Dara.
So tell us, Ruth, how you got involved in the Burn Chernobyl project.
Yeah, so I suppose long before I started travelling over, the Shannon Parish took on a Jubilee project back in the year 2000 to raise funds for a project, and Canon Brendan O'Donoghue got in touch with Brother Liam, and they, along with Father Tom and the parish, kind of got the ball rolling and hoped to raise funds for Gardaí Tí Orphanage because it was in a terrible state. They needed a lot of... They were in the middle of building a new building, but they had no furniture, and they needed that new building badly because the state of the old building was... Mm-hmm. The kids were living in a terrible conditions. So my mom started travelling out a few years after that. And then a few years after that, when I turned 18, I started going, and I've been going now for about 14 years.
Well, and can you talk to me about the experience of actually travelling to Chernobyl?
Yeah.
What was that like?
So I suppose the unknown the first year is a big one.
I mean, it must have been emotional the first time you went there because the place must have been horrendous to see.
Well, yeah, it was tough. There was a lot of situations and scenes that were difficult to comprehend.
They were,
very emotional.
Yeah. And even to this day, can I ask as well, it's not fully back to its normal self, the Chernobyl, is it?
Well, so we don't actually... Chernobyl is in Ukraine, and we've travelled to Belarusian orphanages, which Belarus borders Ukraine to the north, and Belarus kind of got the brunt of an awful lot of the damage as a result of the accident. So I have actually been to Chernobyl, to the nuclear zone, but that was myself on a personal trip a couple of years ago. And no, that place hasn't recovered. There is an exclusion zone there where people can only be in there for a couple of days.
And it probably ever won't, really, to be honest.
No, I won't. I won't be going back there. It was a once to see it and then leave. It was a curiosity I had, The places, there are still places in Belarus that have like land cordoned off that aren't safe to grow crops and that kind of thing. There is still land like that affected. And I suppose it was the systematic fall that happened within the country. Like all of the systems failed when Chernobyl hit because the country didn't know how to cope, basically.
Sure.
You know.
Sure.
So and I always feel like it's those that can't advocate for themselves that suffer the most then because they are last seen to get things back up and running. So. Yeah, the conditions weren't great. They have massively improved, but it's still emotional. You don't want them to be there.
Of course.
You don't want them to be in those institutions.
And of course, Ruth, you're a volunteer.
Yeah.
So, I mean, do you get great satisfaction of helping people over there?
Absolutely. But I feel like you get more out of it than you put in. You can put your heart into it. But what you get back is tenfold with the love from the kids and the gratitude and just the... Like, all they want sometimes is to hold a hand or to kick a ball.
The smallest things, isn't it?
Yeah, play a song, sing a song. Yeah, all of that stuff. We totally take it for granted. They want a family, and that's what us, the Irish, the volunteers, the Burn Chernobyl Project, that's what we are to them. We're a family, we're a community, that they're just lacking that side of it, and that's what they love.
And tell us about today. What is today all about?
Today is getting everybody involved over the last 30 years in one place to mark the 30 years of Burn Chernobyl Project. It's a huge milestone to meet for any charity.
It's fantastic, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. And I've been involved for maybe, as I said, 14, 15 years, but that's only half the lifetime of Burn Chernobyl Project. And I've been hearing names and stories about people from the earlier days and from, day one, and I'm going to get a chance to finally meet some of them tonight, and that's really exciting.
Now, of course, you're all volunteers, as I said, with the Burn Chernobyl Project, and of course, without the commitment of volunteers, this would not be possible, but
Absolutely.
Would it be fair to say that Brother Liam O'Mara is the main man for this.
I mean, he's a standalone, and he'll be the last person. He will not say it, but he is a phenomenal...
Great credit due to him, isn't it?
Yes, he's a phenomenal human being. Yeah. He has just done so much for everybody that comes knocking on the door that needs help. And like the pool of people that we help grows and grows and grows. And if it wasn't for Brother Liam, I don't think Burnt Noble Project would still be going 30 years later, and going to the strength it is going. Like, there's a huge testament as well to like the amount of people that return to volunteer and return to help and stay involved because of the warmth that they get.
And finally, from your own perspective, what do you think are the benefits of being in an organization like this?
Oh God. Well, I suppose they're numerous, and I don't know if I could name them all, but being a sense of community, a sense of purpose, a sense of helping where you can. And I was only, I work in a school in Shannon, I was only talking to some of the students there the other week. They were doing a project on charities and that, and I was saying, like, if you can give your time, like, you know, when it comes to packing boxes for the trucks, if you can give money. If you can't give them, you know, a like and a share on social media. Like, there's so much that we can do to help organisations like us. Like, there's so many in the country and the county.
And actually, by the way, you mentioned donating. How can people donate?
Oh, yeah. On iDonate, we have a link on, well, all our social medias, Instagram, Facebook, we have a website. All of them have links to iDonate there. We also can do, like, bank transfers and stuff like that. But iDonate is our main platform. But it, to be a part of something like this, it's like a big family and a big community. And it really is... I have family in Belarus, you know, because of this. And going over there isn't volunteering to me. It's just going home to visit more family, you know.
So for any of our listeners tuning into this program, what you'd say to them is join the Burn Chernobyl project.
Join the Burn Chernobyl, or if we're not near you, join another local organization. Just volunteer, because honestly you get so much out of it.
You do
no matter what kind of organization it is. Burn Chernobyl, I feel, has a special place in my heart, and I know, look, judging by the crowd that's appearing here tonight,
yes, it's great, isn't it?
It's a special place in a lot of people's hearts, with people travelling from all over the country and the county to be here.
Ruth Byrne, thank you very much
for joining us. Cheers.
You're very welcome back to Scariff Bay Community Radio. My name is Dara Leamy, and I'm here at the Falls Hotel in Enniskillen to celebrate the 30 years of Burn Chernobyl Project. And I'm joined by the chairperson of Burn Chernobyl Project, Brother Liam O'Mara. You're very welcome.
Thank you very much. Good to see you. Good to meet you.
What a great night it was. I was sitting there listening to all the wonderful stories. It was very good.
Yeah, a lot of work done, in fairness. A lot of work down the years, yeah.
Yeah, and we'll get to the work with the Burn Chernobyl Project in a minute. But can we just talk about your own background? You actually, you were born and you actually grew up in Galbally near Tipperary border, is that correct?
Limerick Tip border, yeah. Down a little village called Galbally.
Galbally,
you might have heard of Galbally.
Yeah, sorry for the pronunciation.
Hurling manager territory, yeah, you heard of that, John Kiley country?
Yes,
yeah,
yes.
That's where I grew up down
very
there.
Good.
Yeah.
Very good. And you studied primary teaching in Mary Macleod College.
That's right, yeah.
For 4 years.
3 year course in my time. It's only
okay.
3 years.
Okay.
We were so clever we could do it in 3 years.
And talk to me about your teaching. Where did that take you?
I was teaching in Limerick for a year, and then I was teaching in Yall for a year. And in between I joined the Brothers, the Christian Brothers in between.
Yes.
Yeah, I've been teaching. I've been normal for a while.
Yeah.
Teaching in Limerick, and then I joined the Brothers. And in 1985, I think, I came to Enniskillen. So I'm in Enniskillen since 1985, having been in a couple of places before that.
So at what stage then did you get involved in the Burn Chernobyl Project?
Yeah, I think it was 1993. Well, I know it was that Brian Mooney came to the school.
Yes, I heard that story, yeah.
And that's the story. That's how it got me involved. That I, yeah, we took a child
never looked
into school.
Back ever since.
No, and then... No. We took a child in for 6 months, and then they were going out back to Belarus with the children.
Yeah.
And Brian said, will you come? So I came back with him for a week.
Lovely,
and
wasn't it?
Started like that for me.
And can you remember your first visit to Chernobyl? What was that like?
Yeah, well, now I had a few visits to Belarus. The first one place we visited was more like a boarding school than an orphanage, just for clever, normal children, as they call them, excuse the word. So that was like a secondary boarding school. But it was on later trips that I got to chair of an orphanage.
Okay, okay.
Yeah, so because we've done a couple of trips. So I'd taken a year off school in 1996, 97 to go back out and work outside teaching English. And at the end of that, I got to visit chair of an orphanage. And it was my last day outside. I had decided to come home and play golf in Lahinch. But on the last day, I got to visit chair of an orphanage. And that kind of changed everything, you know, from then on. I came back.
Can you, I mean, for some of us who have never travelled to, yeah, as you said, to Belarus, can you describe the scene for us over there? What is it like over there?
At the moment, it's very, very normal. You know, 30 years later, when we went back in 1993, and the
different place altogether.
Different place altogether.
Yeah.
You'd go in Chervin village now. You'd go into a shop and you wouldn't know what to buy because there was nothing, food normal.
Yeah.
There was some dried fish with their eyes looking up at you, and salad, fat meat, fat bacon. That's the kind of what was in the shop, the dark bread.
So it basically it has come on leaps and bounds since.
Leaps and bounds, absolutely.
And bounds.
You could go to Minsk now, you needn't visit any of the orphanages, you could go to the best restaurants and cafes and all that kind of stuff. So it's a totally different world to what we met in the early days. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. And I see here now, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but since 1997, the Burn Chernobyl project has spent in the region of €500,000 on renovating and rebuilding the orphanage in Chervin.
I wouldn't have in my head now exact figure, but we spent a lot of money, in Chervin Orphanage.
And of course, that's obviously funding that has to be got.
Oh yeah, funding has to be raised here. And we're blessed with the amount of funding. After Chervin, we spent as much more in Gorodichi Orphanage, but Shannon Parish raised that money for their Millennium Project, and they entrusted us with the money to go and work in the orphanage. So they're just two of about 15 orphanages that we've worked in as the years have gone on, but we'd have spent a lot of money, big figures. Yeah.
Yeah. So before I let you go, I just have two more very brief questions to ask you. I suppose the first is, what is your plan now from here on in with the Burn Chernobyl project? What's the aim? To keep doing what you're doing for 30 years, I suppose?
Well, having just got the bus pass yesterday, I'm not sure there's another 30 years in me.
There is.
But we, at the end of every year, we look at the accounts.
Okay.
And Helen, my sister, is the treasurer, and she has a bit of money left. And I'd say, okay, we better keep going, doing what we're doing. Yeah. So at the moment, coming to the end of 1993, we still have a bit of money in the bank. Yeah. So we'll keep going for another year anyway and keep sending that. And we're still reaching out to people who are in need. A lot of things have improved in a lot of the orphanages, but there are families, individuals and social service centres reaching out to very poor families. So we're doing a bit of work with those as well as the orphanages. It's just, yeah.
And finally, if someone wants to become a volunteer, because obviously, you know, without volunteers, this wouldn't have happened in the first place.
Yeah, yeah.
So if you want volunteers, how can they become one?
Well, you can contact us or go online and find out all about it. It is very difficult at the moment because of the troubles between Belarus and Russia.
So
you're
restricted going over there at the moment.
And if you look on the Irish government site, it says volunteers not to go to Belarus because of war.
Right.
And before that, we had COVID put an end to volunteers for a couple of years. But I'm still going, and we've one or two people who go out. And when you're there, it's fine, but you never know what will happen. So unfortunately, we can't invite volunteers to come at this point in time.
And you probably hate to be saying that.
Absolutely,
but, you know,
absolutely. Because volunteers, they bring everything to it. Like, you know, they bring their own personality, their own love, their own skills. And there is a bit of money as well, which makes things
other things. You mentioned there about the war, actually, just very briefly, sorry. You mentioned there about the war.
Yeah.
Do you still keep in contact with people despite not being able to actually go and visit the people that you're looking after over
Belarus?
Oh,
yeah, absolutely, yeah. Well,
other people.
Yeah, Ruth and Rosie went out for a couple of weeks. But we still keep contact. Nowadays,
which is great,
isn't it? Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
And it means so much to the children to have contact. They were so lonesome during COVID.
I say they
so
were.
So lonesome.
Yeah, sure, like everyone, I suppose.
Like everyone, yeah. So lonesome. Yeah. And so the contact is very, very important.
It is. Brother Lima Mara, many thanks for joining me on Scarab Big Community Radio. It was a pleasure to be here, and best wishes and best of luck with everything.
And thank you very much indeed. Lovely for you to come. We're very, very pleased.
Thank you. It's our privilege. And I'm joined by Bernard Lucas, who has been heavily involved in the Burn Chernobyl project, and he'll explain to us why in a minute. So, Bernard, thank you very much for joining me.
Thank you, no problem. When you say heavily involved now after tonight's
chat,
I don't think we're a very small little, very, very, very small piece of this puzzle when you hear of all the stories and the time people have put into it.
I'm looking at all your achievements, and no, it's fair credit to you. give us a kind of an overview of how you first got involved with Burn Chernobyl project.
I suppose how we first got involved in it, I lost Katrina in 2016, and Katrina was a very outdoorsy person and, you know, very community oriented.
And that was your wife, just to clarify?
That was my wife, yeah. Yes. Yeah. And we, I suppose, myself and a few friends were talking. We said we should probably try and do something. And
sure.
And we did all the high points in Ireland, in each county in Ireland, in 10 days. That was the first challenge we did. And then the second challenge, we got on board with Brother Liam and the Burn Chernobyl project, and we've been doing challenges for them since. So the first project was we walked across Greenland. I think we did it.
How was that experience? That must have been amazing.
That was absolutely amazing experience. Yeah. It really was. Of all the other challenges we've done, they've been good and stuff like that, but Greenland was
challenging landscape too, I say.
Challenging, yes, but we were, at the time we were there, we were very lucky with the weather, because it is boggy, it can be very, very wet, and the weather can change very, very quickly, and mosquitoes are a huge problem. But the year we went, we were in our t-shirts and shorts walking, and we didn't see a mosquito. We had nets, we had spray,
we were all prepared for the worst.
If we saw mosquitoes, they were in trouble. But we didn't see any. So it went very, very well.
Yeah.
And it was a really good challenge. You were out there for 10, 12 days. So all the food, 10 days I think we did. So you bring all your food, you carry everything.
Okay.
So I thought I was great. I started off at home and I had a 12 kilo bag, I think it was. And by the time I got to the airport and got all our dehydrated food and stuff, my bag had gone up to 21 kilos. So I didn't realize I ate as much, but thankfully every day after the first day, the bag was getting lighter because the food was disappearing. But it was a great, great experience. And then 2019, COVID hit. And then last year we got back on track again, and we climbed Kilimanjaro again for Burn Chernobyl, because it was very easy work with them. They're locally based here in Innis-Stymon.
Sure, yeah.
And it was very good. And you know that every penny that we raise goes to Brother Liam, and Brother Liam gives it on down the line, and we are very happy, very, very happy.
Now, you did mention to me there as well that you haven't been to Chernobyl yet, but is that your aim down the line in the future?
I don't know, to be honest. I'd be more of just behind the scenes.
Sure, that's fair enough.
If we can raise the money, maybe somewhere down the line, possibly, yeah.
So, what's your next fundraiser, do you know?
Funnily enough, myself and Cormac were here tonight, and we were just thinking. So,
what other idea could we have?
We have a couple. We have a big one which we would like to do is Aconcagua, in the highest peak in South America.
Wow!
But that's down the line. That's very expensive for us to do, because we'd pay our own.
And of course, you have to be trained for it and everything too, don't you?
Well, you do.
So that takes time as well, like.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. It does. So in the interim, we're now looking at walking from north to south in Iceland. Take maybe 10, 12 days.
And is it just going to be the two of you?
Two, maybe. We had a group, four or five, but, you know, people have different things on and different things, so... four or five.
Different world up when you're doing that, isn't it?
Yes, it is a very, very, very difficult world. But you know,
you enjoy it though. I can see that you enjoy
it. Absolutely. Yeah, I like the remoteness and the wilderness part of it.
Because not everyone would now, to be fair.
It's not everyone's cup of tea to live out of a backpack for 10 days and carry all your food and no showers and no toilets or anything like that.
Can it be fair to say it can be risky? Can it?
Define risk. You know, some people consider driving the car to Innis as risky, but it depends on yourself.
Yeah. You have to be well planned first.
You have to be well planned, and you have to be well trained.
You can't just climb it.
You have to put the training in beforehand you want to go there and enjoy it. You don't want to go there and go, oh my God, I'm wrecked every night.
You want to get great satisfaction out of it.
You do. And you want, you know, a lot of it is meditative in a way when you're walking on your own. You might walk on your own for a day, or you might be with the group for a day, but everybody kind of, you know, has their own little, you know, so it's a very meditative, and I don't know, you find yourself maybe a little bit in it, or it's very, very good.
No, I have to compliment you on your achievements. Not everyone would do what you did, and it's lovely to see people fundraising for a great charity. And for our listeners as well, would you recommend anyone to join the Burn Chernobyl?
Oh, of course, yeah. The stories, you heard them yourself tonight, they're just amazing. Yeah. And what people are getting from going to the orphanages, and the stories they're coming back, and the friendships they're making, and the children they meet, and go back and meet them again year after year. And it's lovely to have you know, they talk of them so fondly and lovingly. And, you know, it's, yeah, anybody should, if they have the time to get involved in it, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, Bernard. Bernard Lucas, many thanks for joining me on the radio. It was lovely chatting to you, and best of luck.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye. I'm joined now by John Smith from
Doonbeg
in County Clare, mighty West Clare, that's for sure. And John, you're very welcome.
Thank you very much.
It's great to have a chat with you here. You've been involved with the Burn Chernobyl project for roughly 20 years.
Roughly, to my daughter, my daughter Adele, yeah. Yeah, for 20 years.
And how did that come about?
Well, my daughter was finished in college. She rang us from Limerick to say she was going out to Belarus. She had been in touch at that stage. She had already been in touch with Brother Liam, mm-hmm. right? And 3 weeks later, she was over in Belarus.
Okay.
And that was the start of it.
Yeah, yeah.
And that went on for 12 and a half years, I think.
12 and a half years.
Right. Until her first baby was born.
Yes, yes. And what was your involvement then with the Burn Chernobyl project once you had got in contact with Brother Liam? What did you do?
Oh, we helped out with the loading of the trucks.
And can you explain to our listeners what that was all about?
There was a mighty group of people who came together every time there was a truck to be loaded up. The actual crack from that group was brilliant.
Yeah.
My wife then used to bake cakes for the group. They'd have a cup of tea afterwards.
Yeah.
And it was mighty. Such a lovely group to work with, you know.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And of course, let's not forget, you're all volunteers.
All volunteers.
All volunteers.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. You get great. I spoke to many people there. I spoke to Ruth, Brother Liam, and Bernard Lucas. You must get great satisfaction out of all this.
Well, I don't know. It's Brother Liam himself. He's just...
He's a lovely, isn't he?
Isn't he?
He's a lovely man.
You know, he's just, I don't know.
He's a credit, an absolute credit.
He is, yeah.
Yeah.
And we had the privilege of knowing Pat Doherty.
Yes, yes.
Right?
Yes.
And Pat was just, she was just full of love. But
and
such
for
a
her,
volunteer.
For our listeners who don't know Pat, she passed away. She was one of the volunteers.
Yeah, passed away, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
But she was oozing with, you know, love and, you know, dedication to any cause that helped people.
Yeah.
Worse off than ourselves, you know.
Yeah. And 30 years, a fantastic achievement.
Fantastic achievement, yeah.
Yeah.
But as I say, Brother Liam always surrounded himself with people.
He did, yeah.
You know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And even today, I mean, I can see, you know, as the time is going on with the loading of the trucks, the next generation, the younger people were there helping out.
Mm-hmm.
And they're the next generation. As they said tonight, you know, I mean, the you know, the children of volunteers who volunteered in the early stages are now the volunteers are working to keep the
isn't that amazing?
The group going.
That's amazing, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
It's lovely, lovely to see. I suppose I'm asking the same question to all of those that I've interviewed so far. For someone listening to the programme on the radio, what would you say to people listening? Would you definitely recommend them to join the Burn Chernobyl project?
I certainly would. I certainly would, because.
And what are the benefits out of it?
Well, the benefits for volunteers going out there.
Yeah.
Is the love they get from the children out there, and it is pure love. And I mean, one of the messages tonight from the people out there in Belarus was the international language is love. And that's what they respond to, the children in these orphanages.
Yeah.
They respond to love. I remember on one occasion going out with my daughter Adele, right? And we went to Shervan Orphanage. Now, that was my first visit to Shervan and into the orphanage. And when I went into the corridor, word got out that Adele was in the building. And it reminded me of the story, you know, the Pied Piper?
Yes.
Right? When he got rid of the rats,
mm-hmm.
right? And then they didn't pay him, so he played music and all the children followed him.
Yeah.
And it reminded me of that, you know, the children just... There was a ring of them.
Yeah.
A line of them.
Yeah.
Going after him. And it was just pure love there.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, yeah.
So
overall... With your 20 years with the Burn Chernobyl project, it has been a memorable experience.
Memorable, yeah. And I think it's
and you do it all over again.
for anyone that has ever gone and helped with Pearl Shenova, you know, it is
a wonderful organization.
It is a wonderful organization.
And long may it last for the next 30 years.
Exactly.
That's for sure. That's for sure. Yeah. John Smith, volunteer with the Burn Chernobyl Project, thank you very much for joining me.
You're welcome.
And it was a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. So that concludes our program from the Falls Hotel in Ennis-Tymon. Thank you very much for listening to the program. And I hope you got a sense of the wonderful work the Burn Chernobyl Project do. And they are an absolute credit. All the volunteers involved, they should really be proud of themselves. They've done phenomenal work over the past 30 years. And it is a wonderful charity. And please do support Burn Chernobyl Project. So thank you very much. I'll sign you off. It was a pleasure. And until we chat again, for myself, Dara Leamy, take care. Bye-bye.
The large reason why these animals seem to be persisting in high densities or a high abundance within the exclusion zone is because of the absence of humans. As you drive around the exclusion zone, you're overcome by all the lush nature. It's really an eerie reminder of the tragic human impact that occurred there back around 30 years ago. The Chernobyl exclusion zone is basically a 30-kilometer radius that was created that extends around the nuclear reactor where the accident occurred. And within that 30-kilometer zone, that's where preventative measures were taken to exclude people. So all the towns, villages, cities within that area, that 30-kilometer area, were evacuated.
So 30 years after the accident, this woodlands increased up to 1.5 or more times. So now approximately 70% of area under the forest.
If we talk about large mammals like carnivores and ungulates, it's really good habitat because it's a wild territory now, and especially this very wild spot along the border with Belarus, and also many different water sources like lakes and rivers and springs.
So the work that we've been involved with in the Chernobyl exclusion zone has been to look at the distribution and relative abundance of wildlife, particularly large mammals and especially carnivores, specifically looking at radiation contamination. So as you move from areas of low to high contamination, do you see a subsequent drop-off in the number of species that you detect, the relative abundance of those animals? Species we most commonly documented were raccoon dogs, large numbers of photographs of gray wolves, red fox, Eurasian boar, Eurasian badger. When we have human-dominated landscapes, we have lower densities of animals, especially animals that come into conflict with humans, like wolves. And so after people were removed, even though the landscape was highly contaminated, it allowed them to increase. What this research is not looking at is the individual health of those animals. So it doesn't suggest that these animals are incredibly healthy, although on the surface they appear very healthy. It doesn't imply that there aren't more subtle genetic effects, and that's an important area that I think we need to continue to explore with future research down the road.